It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Do I support impeachment of Rod Rosenstein? No, I do not. I do not for a number of reasons. First, I don't think we should be cavalier with this process or with this term, number one. Number two, I don't think that this rises to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors, a really high standard. Number three, we, since I got involved, have been getting a lot of compliance from DOJ on the document request. We do not have full compliance, and we have to get full compliance, but we've been making tremendous progress to that point.
Sandy Rios with you on this Monday morning. That was the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan. I wish I had a montage of every single time Speaker Ryan jumped out in front of a mic the morning after President Trump made an initiative, the morning after he always opposing, always an obstruction, whether it's on the border, whether it's on immigration, whether it is the fact that Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan filed articles of impeachment against Rod Rosenstein for his failure to comply with their request, their rightful request for documents to investigate what's going on in DOJ and the FBI. It's amazing. The consistent action of the Speaker of the House, this Speaker, has been to obstruct the will of the American people, which is represented in the House of Representatives. We have very poor leadership. We say that every day. But, you know, last week on Thursday, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio sent a letter to his colleagues announcing his intention to run for Speaker of the House. It was a dramatic letter, and he joins us this morning to talk about it. Good morning, Congressman Jordan.
Hey, Sandy. Good to be with you.
It's great to hear your voice. I just want to know, from your point of view, Congressman, why is the House of Representatives so weak and ineffective? It's a great disappointment to us. Why is that?
Well, we're just simply not doing what we told the American people we were going to do. We haven't repealed Obamacare. We haven't built a border security wall and reformed immigration like we told the American people we're going to do. We haven't reformed welfare requiring able-bodied people to actually work before they get your tax dollars. And we certainly haven't controlled spending. And to the point you started with, we haven't stood up to the executive branch enough. I mean, think Rod Rosenstein. Numerous letters were sent clear back last November that they have not complied with. There are two subpoenas they are not in compliance with. We have caught them hiding information from us that we should have been able to get, redacting things that we were supposed to be able to see. And we know Rod Rosenstein has threatened, according to two different media reports, threatened members of staff members on the House Intel Committee who are simply trying to do our job, help us do our job of doing providing oversight and getting answers for the American people. So that is why this guy should be impeached if they do not give us everything we are entitled to get.
You know, Congressman, I just want to remind people that, because I covered Benghazi pretty faithfully, House leadership under Boehner and then Ryan was so feckless that they pretended to oversee, at least to say Benghazi, for instance. And actually, I know because of my friends and connections that that was a sham hearing. And no one was ever brought to justice. We also know, this is less widely known, but there was a breach of the IT in the House of Pakistani nationals.
Yep.
That's a horrendous story, completely covered up, and Paul Ryan did nothing about it. Okay, so my question for you is, if there were effective leadership, if you could actually take that gavel and do what you have done for decades as a coach, a leader of men, what difference would it make in the House of Representatives?
You would push much harder. I mean, look, when you issue subpoenas, people have to come. When you have hearings, people need to answer the question. For example, just last week we had a meeting with people from the Department of Justice, and they told us that in the hearing with Peter Strzok just 3 weeks ago, one of the first things the FBI counsel told us is, you know what, Mr. Strzok should have answered 90% of the questions Congressman Jordan asked. Well, fine, you tell us now. Where was that when we were having the hearing? So those are the things that have to change. And the only way they change is if we have the political will to actually push. I mean, there are all kinds of examples where we just forfeit before we even have the debate, before we even have the bring the issue up. We just forfeit and say, oh, we're just going to spend more money, or, oh, we'll just give in to the executive branch, not actually make people come testify, not actually make them answer the questions we ask, not actually make them comply with subpoenas. That has got to change. And Mr. Meadows and I and others are willing to push every tool and use every tool we have to get answers. And think about this, Andy. The dossier, we found out in that hearing with Peter Strzok, took me to the third round of questioning of him, but we found out in that hearing that the FBI was actually getting parts of the dossier from the Department of Justice top official, Bruce Ohr, one of the top officials. Bruce Ohr's wife, Nellie, worked for Fusion GPS, the firm that was being paid by the Clinton campaign. So think about it. His wife's working for the firm paid by the Clinton campaign to produce the dossier. He's then, Bruce Ohr, is feeding information to the FBI that they use to take to the secret court to get a warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. Unbelievable that happened, and yet we're just willing to sit back and say, oh, the Department of Justice is doing the best they can to get us the information that we're asking for, even though they're not in compliance with subpoenas. Not to worry, we'll eventually get there. Baloney. We have to push.
Yep. Congressman AMAC did a poll just in the last few days. They polled 2,800 voters, and 87.47% of the people they polled want you to be the leader of the House of Representatives. But your race is really an inside game. We need to explain that. This is all about the House. It isn't. We American voters don't have really control over this, except that we can ask the question of our nominees or candidates if they will support you. And people mm-hmm. are doing that. You know that. American Family Association is all yep. behind you. And so are many, many, many other organizations. But
I appreciate that, yeah.
All right, so you wrote a letter to your fellow congressman. We all know that you are part of the Freedom Caucus. You're a champion to us. You're not a champion to others in the House. I think that my take, if I had to, I think you're probably highly respected, but they are uncomfortable or nervous about the strong stand you take. So how is that going, wooing your other members of Congress into supporting you for this important role? Why would they do that?
A couple things first. Thank you for your help. And I've been just so, frankly, shocked at the support that we're getting from conservatives and from Republicans all across the country. You're right, though. It's a student council election. It's the members. Yeah. If we keep the majority, which is the most important thing, it'll be those Republican members in the majority of the House of Representatives who make the decision. What I've told my colleagues, and I think this is something that even outside the Freedom Caucus, people are so frustrated with, and that is how the place is run and how little rank-and-file members have how little say they have in final policy and how things actually happen in the House. It's always just a few people at the top making all the decisions. And frankly, all kinds of members are tired of the governing by crisis. They're tired of a couple people at the top making all the decisions, and then you're told just vote for the bill. So a few things that need to change. One is there are going to be 9 committee chairmanships open up next Congress. If we keep the majority, 9 new committee chairmen, I don't think it should just be the speaker and the majority leader and a couple people who control the steering committee decide who gets to be committee chairman. I think it should be those members who are already on the standing committees. They should decide who is the best to lead that committee to accomplish what we told the American people we were going to accomplish. And it should be based on talent and skill and experience and know-how, not on who's cozied up to the leadership and who a few people at the top think is going to be the person who's going to do what they want them to do versus the one who's going to do what the committee and what the American people have asked us to do and elect us to do.
There's so much to talk to you about. I'm going to just ask you one quick question and then let you go, sir, because I know you have so much to do. The president is talking about actually a potential government shutdown. There's a new stopgap budget measure, same old thing, same old, same old, as I understand it. Tons of spending that no one asked for. The Senate is weak. The House is weak. What do you think a shutdown would do to this 2018 midterm?
I think the most important question voters are asking, particularly of the House, is what have you done that's consistent with what we elected you to do? Are you complying with the mandate we gave you in 2016? Think of it this way, Sandy. In a year and a half, the president has reduced regulations, cut taxes, the economy is growing at an unprecedented rate, lowest unemployment in 20 years, Gorsuch is on the court, Kavanaugh is on deck. We're out of that terrible Iran deal. The embassy is going to Jerusalem, and the hostages have come back from North Korea. That is an amazing year and a half. That long list, the only real thing Congress has helped with is the tax cuts. And those are good. Those are important. But where are all the other things we promised the American people were going to do? So I think the most important questions voters are going to be asking this fall is, did you do what you said you would do? And so when we get back in September, we had better start focusing on some of those issues that we promised the American people were going to focus on. That is the most important thing. The left wants to talk about a shutdown and all this, but what I want to talk about is let's do what we said. Let's focus on that. And whatever that takes, let's get that done. Then we'll be in a position to maintain the majority and continue to help President Trump do what we were all elected to do and make the country great again.
And wouldn't that be something? Okay, Congressman Jordan, off you go. And you representing us, working for us, and we're grateful. We pray for you, pray for your family, and we look forward to talking to you again. We wish you victory, that's for sure. Okay, thanks a lot, Congressman.
Take care.
All right, you too. Okay, bye-bye. All right, well, you know, it's funny because I was watching, now look, I can't say this definitively, but let me just say, I do not think that Congressman Jordan was on any of the Sunday shows. You know, it's a big deal that he announced for Speaker, and yet nobody in the media wants him to be Speaker. Certainly Fox, you know, now some of the, certainly I'm not talking about Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and some of the others that are even Tucker, but the special report and the news shows, you know, are really tied with Republican establishment. There is no way in the world they want a Jim Jordan to be Speaker. And so they're just like being silent about it or just doing, you know, a sentence. Oh, and Jim Jordan decided to be, you know, wants to be Speaker. So it's interesting to see that. Kevin McCarthy's thrown his hat in the ring. But as I told you last week, neither Kevin McCarthy nor Steve Scalise have the votes to be Speaker. And you can bet that if they had the votes to be Speaker, the election would already have been held because that's the way it works. They do it quickly so that no one else would have a chance to garner the votes. But fellow congressmen are not supporting them, not for that position. But it's hard because these are colleagues. It's like Congressman Jordan just said, this is like a student council election. It's in-house and it's friends of friends. And so it's hard, you know, to vote against your friend Kevin McCarthy or your friend Steve Scalise. It's just, it gets very complicated. So lots of conversations have to take place, and that's what's happening. And certainly, there was a petition to support Jim Jordan for Speaker, and it's garnering thousands and thousands of people. We'll put a link to that, actually, on our Facebook page. And, of course, the American Family Association is supporting that, but we're not the only ones. There are tons of organizations who are weighing in, a Club for Growth, Eagle Forum. I can't remember the list, but trust me, there are tons of people who are real excited about this possibility because, you know, it would change the entire tenor of the House of Representatives. Can you imagine if we had a House of Representatives that was actually doing the people's business? Can you imagine if we had President Trump doing what he's doing, the good things he's doing, and we had a speaker who came out immediately supporting him instead of undermining him? Can you imagine that? It's hard to imagine. And yet, let me just say that according to some sources, the Republican Party has the toughest reelection map it's had in 88 years. You know, a lot of people have stepped down. I think a lot of them are rhinos. You know, they're not, look, not my kind of people, not my cup of tea. But that means that those open seats are being vied for by people who sometimes it comes down to who has the most money. Because it's name recognition. People are not paying attention to these races like you and I are paying attention. And so there are 42 seats that the Republicans are having to defend, and the Democrats only need to flip 23 to take the House. So this is really important. And as I have begged you almost every day, would you please, even as soon as this show is over, find out when your primary is, if it hasn't taken place yet. Find out who the best candidate is. You can research. You know, I can't tell you all of those. There's too many races for me to follow, but you can do it. Get behind that candidate. Give them money. Give them support. Make phone calls and be active. And then certainly in the primary, in the general election vote, but the primaries are more important, actually, initially, than the general. You have to do both.
Len Ingram of Redeem Clean felt God call him to support the American Family Association.
I'm a laundryman. I'm the son of a laundryman, too. I love clean clothes. I love the business. I love everything about it. This project was built exclusively to support AFA and AFR. There's no strings attached. Another thing that I would like to see come out of this is that I would like to see other business people feel a calling to support ministries wherever and whatever they do to share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
In addition to your regular AFA giving, Redeem Clean Laundry Detergent allows you to increase your support of AFA just by continuing to wash your family's clothes. For clean laundry and support of a cleaner society, it's Redeem Clean. Learn more, find options, and get Redeem Clean products at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
A friend of mine rang my cell phone with this statement.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
I've been asking God to touch a friend to have a heart that's warming toward a relationship with Jesus. My friend related at least three circumstances that have been motivating this mutual friend to explore who Jesus is. You know, it's always fun to see Jesus open up opportunities to introduce himself to someone we've been talking to about him over a long period of time. Many times these moments are catalyzed by environments of grace. The Bible describes these environments characterized as gracious speech and actions toward others. We don't experience much grace in this hectic culture, but environments of grace bring hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Gretchen Carlson says she wants to give the Miss America organization a makeover. Miss Carlson is the new chairwoman of the famed beauty pageant / scholarship competition, appearing on Good Morning America. She is the first former pageant winner to serve in the history of the organization, going back nearly 100 years. Former leaders and board members were forced out after emails surfaced exposing criticism they made about the appearance, intellect, and sex lives of former contestants. Miss Carlson says it's a form of justice that former Miss Americas who were trashed in those emails are now running the pageant. But how she plans to empower the women is not exactly clear. She declined to say if the Miss America pageant will include a swimsuit competition because, as we all know, nothing personifies intellect and brain power like parading around on stage in high heels and a skimpy bikini. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This is about saying we are a community of people and that the children of any one of us is the children of all of us. These are our children. That's who we are, and when we talk about the best of who we are, we understand they are the children of a community, and we should each think of them as being our own, and we should treat them that way. We should understand the love that a parent has for their child. It doesn't matter where that parent was born. It doesn't matter what that language is that they speak. It doesn't matter who that God is they pray for. The love a parent has for their child is one of the most purest forms of love. And we must honor and respect that and understand that. That is the ultimate act of inhumanity, to rip those children from those parents. And to do it for what? For the sake of so-called deterrence? It's inhumane. It's criminal. The United States government is committing an act that is absolutely one of the most inhumane acts, which is to take babies from their parents. And it is important that we all stand up and say we as a country are better than this.
Okay, so that might be your future president, Kamala Harris, a senator from California, saying that the illegal immigrant children are must be treated just like our children. You know, on a personal level, certainly, you know, we should treat everyone with compassion. Of course, this is where our minds get confused because we would never personally mistreat other people's children. But saying that they should be given the same rights and privileges as our own children in this country, that's a far different cry. And that's something that's the problem. That's where it becomes madness. The world's children, we cannot be responsible for. We have to be responsible for our children first, and then with what we have left over, we can take care of as much of the world's children as we possibly can. But that kind of logic escapes most people on the left. You know, the elections, of course, are coming up, and there's just a lot of concern about it. I hope to do an entire show about this in maybe even this week. But I want to give you an idea of what we see happening. Daniel Horowitz wrote an interesting article last week. And he said, nobody can say that the Russians made a difference with the actual voters in the Midwest who elected Trump, speaking of elections. But what does make a difference is foreign nationals actually voting in our elections, as well as being counted in the census. They do more than influence our elections. They downright shape, distort, and irretrievably alter the outcome of our elections. Why is there no concern about this issue among the political class? And then he goes on to describe Christian Adams' recent finding through the Public Interest Legal Foundation that thousands of people in Allegheny County, for instance, Pennsylvania, voted illegally. They estimate in Philadelphia City over 100,000 non-citizens were registered over the past two decades statewide. There's a lot more to that story, and that's what I want to cover in more detail. Maybe we'll get Christian on and we'll talk about that. But in conjunction with that story, Governor Cuomo of New York City has granted conditional pardons to dozens of locked-up sex offenders, sexual predators deemed too dangerous to be returned to the community after their release from prison are among the thousands who receive conditional pardons from Governor Cuomo, giving them the right to vote. Among that are at least 77 sexual predators sent to civil confinement in state psychiatric hospitals after their prison time was up. Some of them, they've identified their names. One was Hector Aviles, known as the Voodoo Rapist. Aviles was convicted of second-degree rape in Westchester County after telling three of his victims, the oldest who was whom was 16, that if they participated in a sexual ritual with him, he could help them with their problems. And if he didn't, he said bad things would happen to them and their families. So Hector's just one of the 77 sexual predators that Governor Cuomo has given the right to vote to, along with thousands of other criminals. In May, he announced that more than 24,000 parolees in the first round, just the first round alone, were issued conditional pardons. So this is the kind of shenanigan that's going on in our country, that the left is doing everything they can to beef up the voter rolls. They're doing it with the census as well, which we have discussed, counting illegal immigrants in the census, which gives and congressional districts in those areas, more congressmen because congressional seats are awarded based on population. So they're counting illegal immigrants, and then these particular parts of the country are getting more representation. And, of course, these congressmen are inclined to do things that benefit illegal immigrants because, of course, down the pike, they're hoping that these illegal immigrants will become also voters. And some of them have been voting, as a matter of fact. Speaking of other things in the election, this is interesting. In Florida, there is a candidate for governor who has been very close to Rick Scott, the current governor. He's the agricultural commissioner. His name is Adam Putnam. And up until recently, he has been trouncing his challenger, and his challenger is Congressman Ron DeSantis. You know, Ron is a part of the Freedom Caucus. You've seen him on television a lot. He's just solid and very, you know, has a lot of wisdom, and he is leaving Congress to run for governor, and people have not been giving him much of a chance of winning because he doesn't have the funding. Adam Putnam has tons of funding. He's got the backing of Rick Scott, who has tons of money. And so it looked like Adam Putnam was going to, you know, trounce DeSantis. In fact, a recent Fox News poll had Putnam up over DeSantis by 15 points, but that was in June. So, interestingly enough, President Donald Trump, and this is what he tweeted on June 22nd. Congressman Ron DeSantis, a top student at Yale and Harvard Law School, is running for governor of the great state of Florida. Ron is strong on borders, tough on crime, and big on cutting taxes. Loves our military and our vets. He will be a great governor and has my full endorsement. So guess what? The Gravis poll recently showed DeSantis up 6 percentage points. A Florida Atlantic University poll pegged the DeSantis advantage at 9 points the next week, which was the week second week of July. Mason-Dixon poll, the most recent survey, reported DeSantis is ahead by a stunning 11 points. So almost a month, I'm reading this from, by the way, what is this? It's an article by Phil Wegman. Not sure the outlet. I think it's a Florida outlet. Almost a month before the August 28th election, the Sun Sentinel reports that DeSantis has so much momentum, he may be unstoppable. DeSantis, again, is from working class roots. He's a graduate from Yale and Harvard Law School and served as a JAG officer. He served, I think, in Iraq. So that's interesting. So that's a race in Florida that people are watching carefully. All right, so that's kind of an election update, just a little mini one. And could I also say, you know, I think I've said this before today, but I'll repeat. Would you please pay attention? There are lots of primaries coming up this month. And some of them, I think, next Tuesday, I believe, and I won't be able to rattle this off, but Michigan for sure, and maybe Missouri, I'm not sure. But I'll rattle those off more carefully for you next time. But you can do this. You can be prepared. You're seeing ads in your own state, and so you have to take responsibility. I know you will. I'm just encouraging you. I try to inform you as much as I can. I do, but you know that there's more races, 538 in the country, congressional races, and I just can't tell you who's who in all of those races. So this is where you step up to the plate, and I know you will. We have to get some good people in there, and God willing, you know, I have to say that sometimes we don't really know. We just don't know what God's mind is on things. Most of the time, I guess I would say, unless it's something in Scripture where we know how he feels about things. And so I say this with that in mind. But I have sensed God's presence in a lot of things that are going on. And that doesn't mean the outcome will be what I anticipate. And one of those things is the candidacy of Jim Jordan. I have to tell you, I just feel there is... that God has been favoring. He's been doing a lot of things to sort of help. That's just my sense of it. You know, Jim Jordan is a committed Christian and uncompromising. He really is. He's an uncommon person. And so that's why I've been excited and motivated to do all I can to help him. But if the Congress should flip in 2018, and I've already told you how likely that might be. It may become a Democratic stronghold. Then the whole story is going to change. I mean, the entire story. President Trump's agenda could become absolutely null and void. Nothing accomplished. Nothing. And in fact, the House will turn around and under Nancy Pelosi will go after him with a vengeance with the power to do it. And everything, and I would say also these conservatives like Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, and others who have stepped forward, they will be destroyed. I guarantee you. You can take it to the bank. And so we are praying that God will continue to uphold righteousness and the good men who are doing everything they can to stop this torrent of wickedness that's happening in the nation's capital. And so far, I've seen God just really answer prayer. But sometimes, you know, God prospers us. He answers prayer, and then sometimes answers prayer the way we hope that he will, and sometimes he doesn't. So I'm not declaring victory. I'm not, but we'll see. I do say to you, though, that I have sensed a supernatural things happening in this process. I want to tell you a couple of other things that I've been meaning to tell you, but just wait a second. I'm going to play this thing. No, I'm going to keep going. There were a couple of stories that I held off on last week, just didn't get to, that I think are important. You know, one of the important things, one of the many, 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 many things that President Trump has done is that the Ninth Circuit Court in San Francisco is the most left-leaning court in the nation. I think their record of being overturned by the Supreme Court is somewhere in the 90th percentile. Because, of course, now we've got other crazy courts around the country, but the Ninth Circuit still holds the record for being the most overturned because they're out of their collective minds. So several months ago, President Trump nominated a really solid nominee for that court named Ryan Bounds. He is currently an assistant United States attorney for the District of Oregon. He clerked for a rare conservative Ninth Circuit judge who he was nominated to replace. So from the very beginning, the Democrats made hay out of Mike Round's writing in college as a kid, as a college kid. He poked fun at snowflakes, the mentality of college students. He criticized, and I'm reading this now, I'm paraphrasing from Daniel Horowitz's article on this. He criticized the divisive nature of identity factions on campus. Mike Rounds, even at a young age, actually perfectly articulated a view that many conservatives hold, that an obsession with dividing people into factions is not only superfluous, but harmful to our common cause as Americans. Bounds contended, this is a college student, that the existence of ethnic organizations is no inevitable prerequisite to maintaining a diverse community. White students, after all, seem to be doing all right without an Aryan student union. Okay, so that's what he wrote. That's the it was so egregious to the Democrats. And it was right up front. This has been going on for months. People knew about his record. This is something he wrote in college as a kid, a college kid. So they knew about this. At the last minute, without telling anyone, without telling the committee chair, without telling leadership, the Judiciary Committee, Chuck Grassley, Mitch McConnell, Senators Marco Rubio and Tim Scott waited until the last minute at the most embarrassing time for the president and the majority leader to act offended about something that was the most notorious fact about the nominee from the very beginning. So suddenly, Marco Rubio and Tim Scott, without warning their leadership, vote against Mike Rounds, citing his statement when he was a college student that white students, after all, seem to be doing all right without an Aryan student union and arguing for not dividing people up in colors. So I have to tell you, I'm just dumbfounded. I've been so disappointed in Marco Rubio. You know, when he was, I met him when he was first running for Senate and supported him so much. I was so impressed. And every time I heard him speak, he was just, he's a great speaker, compelling, and he said really good things. He seemed to believe those really good things. He understood capitalism and free markets and democracy because his parents had come from Cuba, and he was pro-life and all of these things. I just don't know what's happened to him. He has been a huge disappointment, and so has Tim Scott, to be honest with you. Just not leading properly, just they're thinking confused and fuzzy. They've lost their clear thinking and the reasons why I think people voted for them. So there you go. That's one thing I wanted to make sure I told you about. And by the way, in the issue of the latest Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, the New York Times and the AP are both now seeking email from his wife, Ashley Kavanaugh. She is the town manager of the village of Chevy Chase. They want all of her email, every single one of them. They want any email containing words like liberal, abortion, gay, and federalist. The wife of the nominee. They want everything she's ever written. That's what one is asking. The other is specifying these words. It is outrageous for them to be able to do this for a spouse. You know, it's just no holds barred attack against people even a hint of conservatism. They must be destroyed, their wives and their children and their families. This is just unprecedented. I'll be back right after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Should Republicans win majorities in the midterm elections, Congressman Jim Jordan of the House Freedom Caucus has announced his bid for Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. Representative Jordan is a tried and true conservative. Not one of these guys who campaigns one way, but morphs into someone else once they get to D.C. As Speaker, Congressman Jordan will have the authority to appoint committee chairman, and he will control what legislation comes to the floor for consideration. The entire nation will benefit from having Congressman Jim Jordan as the Speaker of the House.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
General Manager for American Family Radio, Jim Stanley.
Stacy Washington, does that name ring a bell? You may have heard her on Fox News, CNN, or our sister network, Urban Family Talk. She's proven to be a champion for biblical values. I'm excited to announce that beginning Monday, August 6th, you can hear Stacy on American Family Radio. Listen for Stacy on the Right weekday afternoons from 2 until 3 Central, just after Focal Point.
It's often difficult to deal with the problem of pain, but what about the problem of pleasure? When a person pursues and attains all life has to offer, but still struggles, what does that say about the human heart? Find out this week on Let My People Think with Ravi Zacharias.
Let My People Think, Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Netflix continues to ignore the outcry about 13 Reasons Why. The American Family Association, along with Parents Television Council and several other pro-family groups, have reached out to the streaming service, urging the cancellation of their program. Netflix has not even responded to our letter. Instead, they released an even more vile Season 2 and are producing Season 3. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings says their program is engaging and that it fosters discussion of taboo topics like suicide and sexual assault. But at what cost? 14-year-old Anna Bright and several other teens have committed suicide after watching the show. Hastings calls our objections propaganda. Does he feel the profitability of his company is worth more than the lives damaged or lost because of his show? Please sign our petition to Netflix, learn more, and share our action alert when you visit AFA.net. And pray Reed Hastings will recognize the dangers of 13 Reasons Why.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Turkey's Sharia supremacist president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has responded pointedly to President Trump's threat on Friday of large sanctions against the Turkish regime if an American taken hostage nearly 2 years ago, Pastor Andrew Brunson, were not promptly allowed to come home. Erdogan declared, quote, "We will not take a step back when faced with sanctions. The Americans should not forget that they will lose a sincere partner," unquote. Actually, we lost a sincere partner many years ago. It started when Erdogan began fundamentally transforming his country from a modern and secular, albeit Muslim, state aligned with the West into a repressive Islamist and even jihadist one allied with our enemies. Sanctions are definitely in order, and not simply because of Erdogan's mistreatment of Pastor Brunson and countless other less prominent Christians, but because under his misrule, Turkey is an ally no more. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I read the op-ed this weekend with you in the Wall Street Journal, and it's titled Devin Nunes, Washington's Public Enemy Number One. And in it, you say, if people think using the Clinton dirt to get a FISA is bad, what else that's in that application is even worse. And you identify a specific number of pages in the letter you sent to President Trump that need to be redacted. Can you tell us anything about what could possibly be even worse than using an unverified piece of nonsense to actually get a warrant to spy on an American citizen?
Well, and therein lies the problem, right? So you, the mainstream media and the left, they can run out and say, well, what's really bad in there is the stuff that the public can't see. It's redacted. But the reality is that's not the case. Those of us who have been providing oversight over this issue, we've had several of our members who have been painstakingly going through it piece by piece. And we are quite confident that once the American people see these 20 pages, at least for those that will get real reporting on this issue, they will be shocked by what's in that FISA application.
Has the president read the unredacted portions?
I have no idea what the president has or has not read. Okay. All I know is that we sent him a letter back in June asking him to declassify those 20 pages or more. I mean, if they can declassify, the more the better. But I think the bulk of what we would like to see are 20 pages in the last FISA that was signed by the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein.
You know, it seems that the midterm elections become that much more important. The stakes are so high on these midterm elections. We wouldn't know any of this stuff without your committee and your colleagues at Judiciary and Oversight. We wouldn't know half of the stuff that took place in the 2016 elections.
That's Maria Bartiromo on Fox with Devin Nunes. And interesting exchange, and we're going to continue with it in just a second. But you can see that, remember that FISA warrant, and I think there were four of them last week, were redacted by two-thirds blacked out, completely blacked out. I think one of the sections that I heard was blacked out was the fact that the FISA court judge, Contreras, I think his name was a personal friend to Peter Strzok. Peter Strzok is seeking these warrants to surveil the Trump campaign, and he's going to his good friend, Judge Contreras. They are such good friends that they'd shared meals together in their homes. So I don't know if that's redacted, but the relationship was redacted, and it's just amazing. And so you can hear Devin Nunes claiming if you could see at least 21 pages of this, unredacted, you would be shocked. I'm not sure what else could shock us, but I trust him because he's been right about everything. In fact, the Daily Caller News Foundation reported every Republican on the Intelligence Committee knows exactly what's in the FISA warrant, which is why members are uniting in requesting further declassification of it. Devin goes on to discuss with Maria. Let's listen.
What happens if the House flips and the Democrats take the majority in the House come the midterm elections?
Well, that is what I said in the Wall Street Journal interview. Yeah, the Wall Street Journal interview over the weekend, I stated that I am quite confident because I've seen this game played many times before. There's a stall game going on at DOJ and FBI. They're trying to stall as much as they can, hoping and betting that Republicans would lose the House in the fall. And if that happens, then essentially it shuts down everything. Rod Rosenstein will not be held in contempt. FBI will not be held accountable. All these investigations will shut down. Everything will be buried. And you'll be left with media narratives saying, oh, what the public can't read, what you really can't read, what's blacked out, that's the really bad stuff against Carter Page and the Republicans and the Trump campaign. That's why the sooner the president declassifies this, the better. And I think the American people need to understand how important it's going to be to get out and vote in this election.
Well, tell us where your investigation stands right now. Is Rod Rosenstein performing? Do you think his leadership is encouraging them to be upfront and show us justice?
Well, what I can tell you is that there was a move late last week to begin impeachment. I think there are grounds for impeachment, and we should hold them accountable. I think Congress has given up way too much power. The way I understand it is that the Judiciary Committee and Oversight Committee got commitments on Friday. I think the Speaker also got commitments, from what I understand, that documents will be provided. So we're short a few documents. We are supposed to see those this week. But in addition to that, interviews/depositions will begin over August. So we will have members of Congress that will be flying back to Washington during August to conduct interviews with very important witnesses that need to be interviewed as it relates to getting to the bottom of this Russiagate scandal.
All right, so you see what's happening. You've got Congressman Devin Nunes, who's not even part of the Freedom Caucus, and you've got Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows. You've got Ron DeSantis. You got Matt Gaetz and others, you know, Dave Bratton, others I could mention, who are doing everything they can to hold people accountable. How many times have we talked about this? Who's going to hold these people accountable? They're doing everything they can, but they're being led by Paul Ryan, Kevin McCarthy, you know, Steve Scalise, doing everything they can, really, to not hold people accountable. It's just shocking. I don't understand it. I don't understand why every time there's a fight to be had, Paul Ryan's not willing to have it, whether it's on the budget, whether it's holding people accountable, anything. It's just whatever, you know, tap whatever it is down, except conservatives. He comes out against them and against President Trump's policy, you know, guns blazing. But it's just amazing. In fact, you're going to hear me talking a lot more about this next budget fight, but not in this moment. But it's more of the same. It's more of the same. That's why President Trump is threatening to veto it. So this is going to be really interesting, I have to tell you. Changing the subject slightly, you remember last week, the president and the White House press corps got in big trouble for throwing out a CNN reporter or disinviting her from a Rose Garden event. And I just want to remind you, it was Caitlin Collins, and this was an example of her behavior. This was in the White House when the president was there with, I'm not sure which leader, it might have been the European Union leader, I'm not sure, but they weren't exactly talking about what she was asking about, but let's listen to the exchange.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody.
Mr. President, are you worried about what Michael Cohen is going to say?
Thank you.
Let's keep going.
Are you worried about what is on the other tapes, Mr. President?
Keep going. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Why is Monroe not accepting your invitation?
Come on.
Mr. President,
are you going
to invite the President? Thank you,
everybody.
We're done. All right. So as a result of her behavior in that, you know, asking in front of her, I just don't understand how it's devolved into this in any case, that you invite these reporters into the inner sanctum of the White House, the president sitting on a, you know, there. I'm not in what room they're in. But it's one of the main rooms in the White House, and he's got a world leader next to him. They're talking. I don't understand why they would take questions about anything else other than what's being discussed, first of all. That seems unwise, and there's got to be some decorum. So they disinvited Caitlin Collins, and Fox News, Brett Baer, gave a statement of support for CNN, and there was a dust-up over that. But here's the deal. People have been looking back now on how President Obama reacted with reporters and how they were treated in the White House. And it's just really interesting. First of all, I want to play one piece for you. This is something that took place. And I think it's in the East Room of the White House. I think by the curtains, it looks to me like the East Room. And so this is a reporter or person trying to, I don't know if it's a reporter officially, but it's a person present at this press gathering who starts to be unruly while President Obama is talking. And you're going to hear his response, and you're going to hear the response of the press, which is pretty amazing. The press now is quite upset that the White House barred Caitlin Collins from that Rose Garden thing. But this is how the press responded to what was happening on that particular date. And I have to also tell you, this is Wolf Blitzer setting it up from CNN, ironically. Let's listen.
Awful situation. A heckler interrupting the President of the United States just a little while ago during an LGBT Pride Month event in the East Room at the White House, drawing a very sharp rebuke from the President. Let me play the video for you.
I told you that the civil rights of LGBT Americans is...
President Obama!
Yeah, hold on a second. Okay, you know what? No. Hey. Yeah, listen. You're in my house. Come on. It's not, you know what? It's not respectful when you get invited to somebody. You're not gonna get a good response from me by interrupting me like this. I'm sorry. No. Shame on you. You shouldn't be doing this. Come on. this person out. Come on. You can either stay and be quiet, or we'll have to take you out. All right. Can we have this person removed, please? Come on. Come on. Come on. No. No. Come on. Come on, guys. I'm just going to wait until we get this done.
Pretty ugly situation, although the president handled it well.
All right, so that was Wolf Blitzer's wrap-up from CNN. A little different, right? I don't believe that a person should be allowed to heckle like that, a president. I wouldn't approve of someone doing that to President Obama or any other president. But do you hear the response? The chanting of the president, the shaming, that get him out, you know. And that was okay. That was pretty appalling to Wolf Blitzer. So when a CNN reporter did something very similar inside the offices of the White House, that was terrible, that they should disinvite her to the Rose Garden. So that's how it goes. And, you know, many people have been tracking incidences like this with the press when President Barack Obama was in power. In fact, in 2015, Washington Free Beacon's reporter Adam Credo was ejected from a State Department media briefing in Vienna, and senior department officials threatened to call security on him, and he didn't say a word. This was all about the Iran deal, and they didn't want Adam asking any questions that would embarrass them on that, so they just removed him without even letting him ask a question. He was ejected from that meeting. Of course, that's just one example. Also, you will remember that Fox News was ejected at some point. They were not going to be allowed, and CNN, I think, and others kind of circled the wagons and actually supported Fox News, which was pretty amazing. But there are other examples. In fact, there's a photo here I see. It's a female African-American reporter with White House press credentials being carried away by Secret Service in 2009 for attempting to ask President Obama to protect traditional marriage. You can see the picture. I mean, they've got her feet up. They're dragging her away. It's amazing. And then Fox News, as I've mentioned before, and then here's another one. White House Correspondents Association lodges a formal complaint because President Obama would not allow any reporters for the anniversary of Apollo 11 with Buzz Aldrin, arguably one of the most memorable moments in our history. There's a whole raft of these being reported by, this is an article by Hank Berrien. You know what? We'll have to find, I don't know what the outlet is, and so we'll have to find that and put that on our Facebook page. The title is White House Attacked for Barring CNN Reporter. Take a look at how Obama treated journalists. It's a very comprehensive article, and I think you'd find it interesting. And certainly, what we want to know is the truth here, right? I mean, we can always bring up examples of gotcha. Well, they did this. Well, they did that. Sometimes they're true and sometimes they're not. But this is a real example of hypocrisy. And I honestly, I could go on record right now as saying I don't think we should ever allow people to scream and yell improperly. Shouting out questions is a different thing. That's kind of a format. But people that really try to disrupt probably should not. And they shouldn't be asking questions that are off topic, I don't think. But that's kind of the nature of the breakdown in discourse that we are finding in the nation's capital, really, really everywhere, right? We're seeing a breakdown in public discourse and respect for each other's views. All right, well, this is Sandy Rios finishing out on this Monday on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.